The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello and welcome to Reflections Day by Day, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from the appointed daily scriptures and a brief commentary from the publication Forward Day by Day, a daily devotional for disciples. This booklet is intended for any Christian or non-denominational reader and is affiliated with the Episcopal Church, USA. Our readings on this program cover the week of Monday, March 16th through Sunday, March 22nd, 2026. The commentary for March was written by Mike Angell, who serves as the rector of St. Michael and All Angels in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Previously, he served in St. Louis on the staff of the presiding bishop for young adults and college students. He is a writer, husband, dad, and advocate with a passion for justice and finding God in unexpected places. The commentary for Monday, March 16th, begins as follows with a passage from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 7, verse 26. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. This story from Mark's Gospel can make us Christians deeply uncomfortable. How do we square Jesus' words and actions with what we know to be true from the rest of the Gospels, that Jesus' ministry focuses on the marginalized? Why does Jesus choose to engage this woman in this way? We are living in a time with increasing sensitivity around how people are treated because of gender, race, and national origin. We are learning about how systems of power and privilege give some people better and easier access to healthy food and health care at the expense of others. Given the persistent injustices of our own day and our sense of who Jesus was, we expect him to take a stand for this woman. But that isn't the story Mark tells. But if we focus our energy on all the things we wish Jesus would have said in this story, we might miss the power of this woman. She challenges the systems around her. She stands up for her daughter, and against the odds, the healing comes. She is the hero of her own story. And now I'm going to read from the full gospel for today from Mark chapter 7, verses 24 through 37. From there he set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there, yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. Then he returned from the region of Tyre and went by the way of Sidon towards the Sea of Galilee and the region of the Decapolis. They brought him to a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then, looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered them to tell no one, but the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." And the moving forward question for this Monday, March 16th, is, what odds are worth standing against? Now let's turn to the commentary for Tuesday, March 17th, which of course is St. Patrick's Day, the day we commemorate Patrick of Ireland. It begins with a passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 21. "For when the time comes to eat, each of you goes ahead with your own supper, and one goes hungry, and another becomes drunk." Here's the commentary for this one. "At the parish I serve, as we prepare to celebrate Eucharist, a child comes forward each week carrying a beautiful crystal cruet of wine. It hasn't happened yet, but other parents and I joke regularly that there isn't a question of if the wine cruet will get dropped and shattered, but when. I happened to be at the Anglican Cathedral in El Salvador for the 15th anniversary of the ordination of their last bishop. Many dignitaries attended the Mass, Roman Catholic and Lutheran bishops, rabbis, donors, and even politicians. When it was time for communion, the wine was brought up in what was clearly a washed and reused plastic 2-liter soda bottle. We can make a great fuss over honoring the Eucharist, but St. Paul wants us to remember those who come to the table hungry. Fancy containers don't make for worthy worship. We honor Jesus practically when we make room for little children and for hungry neighbors." And now I'm going to read the full passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 17 through 34. "Now in the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, it is not for the better, but for the worst. For to begin with, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and to some extent I believe it. Indeed, there have to be factions among you, for only so will it become clear who among you are genuine. When you come together, it is not really to eat the Lord's Supper. For when the time comes to eat, each of you goes ahead with your own supper, and one goes hungry, and another becomes drunk. What? Do you not have homes to eat and drink in? Or do you show contempt for the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What should I say to you? Should I commend you? In this matter, I do not commend you. For I received from the Lord what I also handed on to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took a loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body that is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Whoever therefore eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be answerable for the body and blood of the Lord. Examine yourselves, and only then eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For all who eat and drink without discerning the body eat and drink judgment against themselves. For this reason, many of you are weak and ill, and some have died. But if we judged ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we are judged by the Lord, we are disciplined, so that we may not be condemned along with the world. So then, my brothers and sisters, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. If you are hungry, eat at home, so that when you come together, it will not be for your condemnation. About the other things, I will give instructions when I come." And the moving forward question for this Tuesday, how does your worship connect to serving others? Now the commentary for Wednesday, March 18th, the day on which we commemorate Cyril of Jerusalem. It begins with a passage from Mark chapter 8, verse 24. And the man looked up and said, I can see people, but they look like trees walking. Cyril of Jerusalem often taught about the cosmic implications of God's work in Jesus. He told catechumens not to imagine only their individual salvation, but rather the salvation of the whole universe. There's a church term that has developed a wider usage, parochial. It can mean pertaining to the parish, to the local church. But colloquially, it is a way of saying our vision has become too small. As a parish priest, I have mixed feelings about this linguistic reality, but I also find truth. It is easy to keep our vision too small. It is easy to settle for a version of our vision that is incomplete, where we can't see people for who they are. But Christ is bigger. God is bigger. When I lift my head from the day-to-day concerns of parish, family, work, and life, I find faith to be an invitation to expand my sight line. God is always working on a grander scale than mine. And now I'm going to read the full passage from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 11 to 26. The Pharisees came and began to argue with him, asking him for a sign from heaven to test him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly I tell you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them, and getting into the boat again, he went across to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to bring any bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, Watch out, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and the yeast of Herod. They said to one another, It is because we have no bread. And becoming aware of it, Jesus said to them, Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes and fail to see? Do you have ears and fail to hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect? They said to him, 12. And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect? And they said to him, 7. Then he said to them, Do you not yet understand? They came to Bethsaida. Some people brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had put saliva on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, Can you see anything? And the man looked up and said, I can see people, but they look like trees walking. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Then he sent him away to his home, saying, Do not even go into the village. And the moving forward question for this Wednesday, where has your vision gotten too narrow, too focused, too parochial? And where is God inviting you to expand? Now the commentary for Thursday, March 19th, the day on which we commemorate St. Joseph. It begins with a passage from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verse 48b. Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety. There is a legend that St. Joseph built a staircase here in New Mexico. In Santa Fe, the Sisters of Loreto built their chapel with the blessing of Archbishop Lamy. When it was nearing completion, they realized there was no way to access the choir loft. According to the story, the sisters prayed to St. Joseph, the patron saint of carpenters, and a stranger appeared. Working only with simple hand tools, This man built a spiral staircase with incredible technical precision and beauty. Carpenters to this day regard the staircase with awe. The man reportedly vanished when the stairway was finished, never accepting his pay. Did St. Joseph build the staircase? Many have debated, but as in the case of Joseph's appearance in the Gospels, the details are few. The question of faith also plays a role in the telling of this story. Rather than saying St. Joseph built it, the story relies on the connection between the prayer and the mystery carpenter who arrived. It isn't certainty, but rather faith that has us reach out to God in our need and to see God's action in response. And now the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. Now, every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover, and when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. And the moving forward question for this Thursday is, where could you use less certainty and more faith? Now the commentary for Friday, March 20th, a day on which we commemorate St. Cuthbert. It begins with a passage from the book of Exodus in the Old Testament, chapter 2, verse 4. Moses' sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The Bible often tells stories of faithful defiance. The groundwork is set for Moses, even before he is born, by faithful, defiant women. Shipra and Puah, the Hebrew midwives, refuse Pharaoh's order to kill the children. Moses' mother, sister, and Pharaoh's daughter conspire to save the infant prophet's life. We say we stand on the shoulders of giants, but how many of those giants did their work quietly, out of the sight of the official histories? Hidden away because of gender, race, or class, how many faithful people defied the norms of the day or the edicts of rulers and brought us to this day? My calling as a priest and member of the LGBTQ+ community is only possible because my elders trusted God more than rules made by humanity. They had faith, and because of that faith, they pushed boundaries. And now I'm going to read from Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 22. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, while her attendants walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. When she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a nurse from the Hebrew woman to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her son. She named him Moses, because she said, "I drew him out of the water." One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and saw their forced labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his kinsfolk. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. When he went out the next day, he saw two Hebrews fighting. And he said to the one who was in the wrong, "Why do you strike your fellow Hebrew?" He answered, "Who made you a ruler and judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you kill the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely the thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh. He settled in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. The priest of Midian had seven daughters. They came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. But some shepherds came and drove them away. Moses got up and came to their defense and watered their flock. When they returned to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you have come back so soon today?" They said, "An Egyptian helped us against the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." He said to his daughters, "Where is he? Why did you leave the man? Invite him to break bread." Moses agreed to stay with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah in marriage. She bore a son, and he named him Gershom, for he said, "I have been an alien residing in a foreign land." And the moving forward question for this Friday, what are the intersections of faith and defiance that have made your life possible? The commentary for Saturday, March 21st, begins with a passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1. "If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal." Some say that this passage is read too often at weddings. The idea is that the word St. Paul uses for love wasn't meant to describe the feelings between married people. Instead, they argue, Paul is referring to agape, divine love, not eros, romantic love. I've been married for over a decade now. Last year, we marked my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. While I hope romantic love is always a part of marriage, I believe agape is the bigger story. Learning to love like God does is the work of a lifetime. Practicing patience and kindness and resisting envy, boasting, arrogance, and rudeness. These are the virtues that sustain us, whether we are partnered or not. We are learning to be less insistent on our own way, less irritable, less resentful, learning to rejoice in the truth. This is what helps us to bear all things, believe all things, hope and endure all things together. Maybe we should read this section of 1 Corinthians more. Now I'll read from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for the prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. And the moving forward question for Saturday, what virtues sustain you? Now, as we near the end of the week and the end of this program, here is Sunday, March 22nd, the fifth Sunday in Lent. It begins with a passage from Ezekiel 37, verse 3. He said to me, "Mortal, can these bones live?" I answered, "O Lord God, you know." As we mark the final Sunday before Holy Week begins, we hear a story that will be told at the great Easter Vigil, Ezekiel's Valley of the Dry Bones. We stand with Jesus as he weeps and cries, "Lazarus, come out!" And his dead friend lives again. The Bible whispers to us about what is coming at Easter. New life is always possible. In my own life, there have been moments that have felt more like dry bones. There are moments when, like Jesus, I have felt lost and wept. Faith doesn't shield us from loss. Religion can't take away sorrow. There are moments in my prayer life when the only word I can muster toward God is why. What I have learned is that these moments are only moments. Our story is not over until God has reached into all the graves we dig for ourselves to lift us out. It doesn't take away sorrow, but it does help our hearts to hold on for the next line in the story. The moving forward question for this Sunday, where can God put sinews back on your hope? And that's all the time we have for today's episode of Reflections Day by Day. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reflections Day by Day is a presentation of the North Carolina Reading Service and is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Please join me again for a new program of readings and commentary next week from Forward Day by Day, a publication of forwardmovement.org. Goodbye until next time.